So here we are at the Design Again podcast, and I'm with our friend Daniele Giardini.
Hello.
And today we wanted to chat a bit about polish, game polish and feel, and also about definitions, about technologies, tools that you can use, in particular in Unity, to give your game a great polish and feel. So. Yeah. So actually, Daniele has been working on these concepts and these techniques for many years, actually.
Yeah, it's a part of being a nerd and a passionate nerd.
And so first about the terms polish and feel. Because polish is really vague. I mean, can affect and lead almost anything.
Yeah.
The story to... But here we actually... have a specific meaning in mind.
Kind of. But I believe that after all, game feel is way more vague than polish, first of all. Mm-hmm. And polish can actually be defined as, polish is, first of all, a personal thing, and so it's objective and subjective, on my opinion. Like, it's for the objective part, it's because to create a game with polish, you need, first of all, to have passion, because it takes a lot of pain in the ass. And second of all, to have culture, because you don't know what polish is unless you saw tons of... it's like when you start using Photoshop and you think, oh, lens flares looks so cool, let's use tons of lens flares, and they fucking suck. But you don't know, because you never used them. So it's kind of a long process to determine what really... can make a game polished. And also every type of game has his polish. There are games where you can just play with the UI and make it polished and you have a polished game. Other games in which every single part needs to have its polish. And that's basically it. I mean, it's how every part of the game is brought to its, in a way, minimalist perfection.
And in fact, you were saying that there's a learning process there, like a sensitivity, and there are also some technical references, like in the book Game Feel, which I will reference. For example, they made some quantification about the human being's perceptions in timing.
Yes, but that's about game. Game feel is more about gameplay.
Yeah. But so the fact that at least you need your movement and your interactivity with the controls to react in a certain specific amount of time, otherwise the game feels clumsy and all this quantification stuff. So there's also a study which is like... the first level, but what you're talking about is an aesthetic layer which is above and beyond that, is more refined than that.
It's not above and beyond. I think they're mostly two different ways. Like, one way is the romantic way, which is what I'm talking about, and the other is, let's see what neurons are activated when we fall in love with a person, and so we can replicate that. But you know when you fall in love with a person after, and you know how to make that love story be good if you have experience. So there's two different approaches. You can approach it scientifically or you can approach it more romantically. I believe the romantic approach to be the better one, because if you know something romantically in a way, now I'm using the word romantically, but it's if you know something from experience, you are more able to play with it. So that's why culture is important, more than just study.
So you mean, for example, in the way you're making your player, your little sprite, bounce and advance, if you have a lot of experience in games and how this feels good, like it's like in Mario Kart, there's a naturalness to that environment, to that language, which you may be familiar or not with.
I believe it's important to actually become naturally familiar with that so that you can intuitively make some decisions and decide what works better. I mean, study is always important, and study is part of culture, obviously. But the natural approach is also very, very important, in my opinion.
So, for example, in your game, Ghost Curry, there you had this problem of control and reaction. It's a runner, no? So it's, yes. You have this. This is one of the main problems of the games that you had to meet somehow, no?
Exactly, because you have things must react, animations must happen in the perfect way, otherwise users will get angry and think that the game is cheating at them.
Because also so it's a game for hardcore players, no?
Yes. And I have to say that I approach that actually with a natural / intuitive / romantic approach. I first of all, from a coding perspective, I try to make the most performant control approach there, so that as soon as you press a button, things happen. You don't have to wait, not even a frame. And then I started using tricks and tests and playing it with my lady, so I had other feedbacks, I could see what's happening, and I'm happy to say that the natural approach actually worked, because, for example, in that case, one thing that all players are saying, and which makes me very happy, is it's hard, but the game is never cheating you. It's always your fault if something wrong happens, which is a very, very good thing. And then I started in that case to use tricks, like for example, on mobile, which is in development since ages, but which I can play on my phone. When you turn left, Ghost Curry works that you have 90 degrees curves. So each time you press left or right, you turn 90 degrees along the road in one or the other direction. And on mobile, the reaction time, since the frame rate is slower, are obviously slower. So to make things appear faster, I use obviously twins to turn things. So you press the button, and then you have an animation that lasts, let's say, around 0.5 seconds, where your ship turns 90 degrees. To resolve the mobile issue, actually, the animation, instead of starting from the beginning when you press your left button, it starts from as if it had already happened for 0.1 seconds, which solves the issue, for example. But this is just an example. There are lots of tricks that one then can naturally and scientifically approach, and that those are all parts both of the game feel and of the polish.
But so all this is done, I mean, you're is a runner in a 2D space, you're moving this spaceship, but it's all done without using a physics engine, am I right?
Yes.
Okay, so it's all animation, movement, and tweening.
Exactly. But for a runner, usually, I mean, a physics engine, we were talking about this before, and I will repeat myself again that a physics engine is most often too much for your physics needs. And it's most often wrong, right? Also.
So a physics engine is too much for your physics needs. So, because, yeah, the point was it's a straw man point that I was making, it was that the most natural thing, once you have your Unity and your physics engine, is to make polish using the physics engine, gravity and rigid bodies, and so that things bounce and like for free without you having to code this stuff. But
yes.
So this doesn't, I mean, this easily gets expanded to handling effects and everything, doing everything in your game using physics, but this could lead to problems, couldn't it?
Yes, this could lead to terrible choices, and this ties perfectly to the idea of game feel, because game feel and polish also in a way, because with game feel you have to find game feel is not that you're trying, is in practically a way of finding, when we're talking about gameplay, the perfect, for example, controls for your character. And it means also that you need to be always in control of your character's actions. If you use physics, you're not in control of your current direction. The physics engine is. And you're actually giving to the physics engine a part of the job that should be yours, because you will probably want to do things, first of all, not in a really realistic way. Obviously, a physics engine is not really realistic by itself, but it tries to. And you don't want that. So that's why, in the end, it's most often, at least for the main character that you control, it's most often way better to create your own fake physics implementation, because that way you have, first of all, you decide exactly how something behaves, because maybe a natural jump doesn't look and doesn't feel as good as a fake jump that players are more used to, or that just looks more cool. And second of all, in every moment of your game, you are in control of your character sections, which is very important.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you make me think about, like, I'm trying to do this prototype game on soccer and football, and there I found exactly the same problem. The few prototypes I found, they were based on physics, on the physics of the ball. But then when you, if you actually watch a football game, much about physics. I mean, there's just a little bit of it in the random shots at the goal, but it's most of it. You need to control. I mean, everything is under control. It's tactics and strategy that are fighting one to the other. I mean, players have no problem in controlling the ball. The problem is in breaking the other team tactics. So I found that using complete control of the movement without using physics and using, in this case, your dot-twin component to give nice effects to the movements, that was all I needed. Sorry?
Yeah, exactly. Also, because if I make another small derailment, and let's say that the soccer game is all about hitting the ball. Still, a physics engine wouldn't work well, even if it was just about how the ball behaves after you hit it. Because in a real soccer match, the ball doesn't travel straight, but it depends also on the point in which it was hit, the curvature that a player gives it, the part of the foot with which you hit it. So unless you really make
and also super, also really power, also actually about the temperature. This is something I discovered. Because, because like the famous goal by Roberto Carlos against France, the effect, the curve effect of the ball was extremely strong, also because there's a special physics effect that is in case when you're hitting the ball on the side and it starts spinning. And if you have a dry, hot evening, this effect can change the amount of curvature enormously. And it was exactly like that in that case. And so, I mean, if you, unless your physics engine has a weather engine built in, that wouldn't work.
Yeah. So fake physics are much more realistic. And if they're not more realistic, they feel better anyway.
And so, but this sounds a lot of work.
Yes, but, it depends, because actually, if you start from the beginning, know what you want to do, first of all, it also depends on the complexity of your game, but also if you start from the beginning, it might need less work than if you use a physics engine, because a lot of times you may start thinking, okay, I'm going to use the physics engine, discover that you have to make some tweak here and there, then there and there's something else, and you lose a lot of time with that too. So, it needs more work only if you compare to a game that works well to a game that works averagely. So yes, that needed more work. But if you want to have the same result, then it actually requires less work.
So,
No, and I was just wanted to add that there is no choice between making an average game and a great game. So.
Well, I'm not sure about that. but so we referred a lot now to tweening. Could you quickly define what tweening is?
Oh, yes. Then tweening, it's actually a mysterious word for a lot of people. And also, I have to say that it has nothing to do with American slang, where I discovered that it means a young teen. It's instead a powerful way of animating stuff via code, because tweening always works via code, to animate stuff via code in an easy way, possibly powerful, and without writing too much. And plus, it most often is a way to keep control of your animations.
So,
and that thing that I said about, I'm sorry, I have to say this because it traumatized me, about tween meaning young teen, is terrible, because I made two twin engines, one called Hot Twin, one called Do Twin, and then I discovered about this slang and everybody was teasing me, so now I'm traumatized.
Yeah, because we were searching for Hot Twin, and I mean, exactly. It's not exactly your tweening engine.
Yeah, there were really people telling me, oh, but when I look for your engine, I get porn results. And I say, what the fuck are you doing with your internet search?
And actually, it was your fault. But we'll never believe that it was by chance. But anyway. You gave this formal definition. But so anyway, the problem that we have in games is that we have to handle change. And digital stuff by itself is not very good in handling change. But so any aspect of change can benefit from tweening. So, absolutely. In the example we made so far, we were referring to moving in a physical space, whether it idealized in a space, let's say. But it's not just that, because in a game, many things can change, like colors, sounds, words.
I used tweening since ages ago, since when I was using Flash. And even here, there is question of culture and knowing how much tweening to apply, how many animations to do not too much, to do not too little, but to find the right balance. But once you know what is the right balance, you can really animate everything. So in a game, you don't have only the gameplay part, where in the case of the soccer game, the ball goes on the players moving, but you also have, for example, all the options panel, the UI, and everything that appears, everything that changes, can be animated, that change, and that gives great game feel. So that's why it's very important. I mean, I didn't make a twin engine for fun, but just because I really, really needed it, because I know how important it is to be able to do stuff like that.
So you've been releasing this tweening engine for free for a long time. It's an asset on the asset store, but now there's also a pro version.
Yes, it's actually this pro version. It's a mostly visual editor features, which allows to just add a component to an object, and then you get in your inspector various options to animate it without using any code. You can rotate, move it, and stuff like that. And also it adds both code and visual editors features for those people that have a 2D toolkit or Text Mesh Pro. And this is actually, in a way, it's for Hot Win 2, which was the previous version of this twin engine, and I made it for free, and I really repented about that. I don't know if this is the right word, because I never used it and ended up spending tons of time to support it. So now I decided that for the visual parts, it will not be free.
Okay, but still it's...
You can also move, but there is also an additional visual editor always in .impro, with which you can also create paths, drawing them directly in the scene view, and animate things along paths, either linear or curved.
Oh, that's really cool. So that's really handy, no? So you can see the path and that you're describing, so get immediate feedback on whether it works or not.
Yes, and if I can just spend a little of not boasting but self-conscious time, just add another feature where you can add a visual manager to a game object, so that it controls the whole game object when it's activated or deactivated, and you can choose call some specific methods like play everything when it's activated, pause everything when it's deactivated, which is cool to make visual editor twins work with pooling systems, which are another important feature of some kinds of games. Pooling systems are awesome.
Yeah, in fact, dotwin handles all its resources quite explicitly, and it has an integration with the Unity environment, no?
Yes, absolutely.
And so this is all handled, and you can see it from the manager, you can decide the strategies. I've seen this in your documentation.
Yes.
Yeah. So because twinning and performance are things that are somehow strongly connected, of course.
Yes, making a twin engine, I discovered lots of tricks about C#. Because it's really the one, maybe, where it's most, performance is most important. Because if you can make something in 1 microsecond instead than in 2, then you have to do that. So you find, you actually code in a way that is not the regular way. I mean, it's not, I used tricks like extension methods, or instead than using classes, I actually wrote lots of stuff inside switch methods, which is less convenient, but it's faster. So you end up doing stuff like that because that's super important for the twin engine, and also to prevent garbage allocations.
But actually, I noticed also that when you're using dotwin in code, the auto-completion features are very well written, so that it helps you a lot while you're writing.
Oh, you're so kind, yes.
Well, you had to do that. I mean, it didn't come for free, I guess. So you had to document every...
Yeah, I actually studied the auto-completion, actually, on one side, the IntelliSense that auto-completes the methods. It's just derived from the fact that I studied the names of the methods in an intuitive way. So you just write... do, and then all the do methods, the dotwin methods that you can use appear. Yeah. And on the other side, I also actually wrote an extensive XML documentation. So every method has its description, and when it appears, you get the Visual Studio pop-up that tells you what that does. So I have been a super incredible nerd with dotwin, yes.
Okay. And, one last thing. I mean, there's a famous video about if one heard what we're talking about and understood nothing, there's a famous video by Flambert where he introduces several notions linked to game feel.
I actually have a kind of how do you say in English? Maybe unpopular. It's not the right word that I wanted to find, but. Opinion about this, and I know you have that too.
Well, the video is useful, and he is also given a downloadable example where executable, where you can test all the steps to give more juice or feel to a game.
Yes, and that's very, very important. I mean,
That's cool.
I respect Flambert enormously. I just think that. And their idea of game feel is all about how a character jumps in the end.
And shoots.
It's much more than that, but it's, if we should sum it, it's kind of like that. While I believe that the game can be much more, so I'm not saying that it's not that. It is that, and what they say is very important, and they awesomely created that. But there is a lot more games, too. I mean, there is depth. And, I mean, their games have gameplay depths because their controls work so well, but they don't have other types of depths, and that's not bad, that's just a choice. I'm just saying, let's remember that games can be a lot of all things.
Yeah, I mean, you could have both the great feel and something else. I mean, you don't need to... Yeah. Games are not just arcades.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's always remember that because, I mean, we're trying to, it's the field that we love. So we obviously want it to expand and to be all that it can be. So let's let it be.
Let it be. Let it also tell, can tell great stories without being a narrative game. If I take Paper Please, I think is an example we both love.
Paper Please is an example of everything.
Yeah, well, also
best thing ever done.
Well, for example, like Sunless Sea. Sunless Sea has very little, almost no game feel. Still, I think the rhythm that they chose, in which the boat moves so slow, I think that's an important feel, and it's not about jumping or shooting. It's a rhythm. It's a life rhythm.
Yes. Not to mention that they managed to create something completely new and original with storytelling. I mean, it's practically IF, interactive fiction. Okay, there's also graphics and you move your boat, but it's interactive fiction. And they managed to present it in a way that is absolutely original, which is lovely.
So a little game feel can go anywhere, but maybe it's not just a game feel.
No, or maybe we have a limited idea of what game feel truly is. Or maybe game feel is just a horrible word that...
Okay, but still we are referring to some concrete problem that anybody who wants to create a game somehow has to meet. Then maybe you can decide to just do an interactive fiction and don't do it, but maybe you should be aware that they exist somehow.
Yes. Oh, and by the way, since we were talking about Sunless Sea and interactive fiction, what we were talking about before instead, about scientific approach versus natural and romantic approach. What the people of Silent Sea made, and if people hearing this don't know what Silent Sea is, please go check it out because it's awesome. They actually reinvented interactive fiction, and the only way they could do that was obviously not the scientific approach. They really had to know it deeply and to have experienced it and to be able to completely, how the fuck do you say it in English? Reformulate it. It's not the word that they want, but kind of.
Well, you had to redefine the entire context, not just some detail of the story. Well, another example comes to mind is recent, Out There.
Yeah.
Out There too is interesting.
I love it.
An approach to narrative, which it's not interactive fiction in a strict sense. And well, it's funny that we in a podcast about the polishing game feel, we're talking about interactive fiction, but yeah. we are making our point. Our point is this: I mean that we would like to see good games with good game feel to tell a good story too.
Yes, and remembering that telling a good story doesn't mean telling a story. It can be a lot of things.
Yep. Not a linear story. Not a linear story. I mean, it can be a perceived story.
Yes. And actually, any type of depth in a game for what concerns characters or backgrounds, etc., is a story, because then somehow your mind always tries to connect stuff and thus fills the void with a story.
Okay, so I think we can all draw our own conclusions. And thank you, Daniele. And
thank you, Pietro.
All the best with your tweening, beautiful tweening engine.
And all the best with your soccer and your soccer culture.
See you soon.
See ya. Bye.